My name's Elijah, and welcome to the Roots Hospitality Podcast.
Yes, chef! Yes.
Welcome to episode 59 with Andre Prokwalski.
Yeah, it's crazy. I love that that's such a small world. Even when you were just talking about having like Mr. Black and being a fan of like Martin Hudak, and I'm just like, oh my God, like you go all the way around the other side of the world and we all just like love each other's shit.
You know,
like,
Martin was a great example for us, especially working his ass off to get the Coffee and Good Spirits competition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this was quite popular competition out here because we were closely working with the coffee guys from some time because they were super hype and so on. So you were aware that something like Coffee and Good Spirits exists.
Yeah, yeah.
And
this
is really hard competition to run with because you need to show off the coffee and the spirits and everything.
Right.
And like Martin was like symbol of passion about it.
Yeah. So I've never seen a man work tirelessly.
Like, exactly.
Everywhere, just nonstop. He's on a plane somewhere around the world doing some, and it's just like it's really inspiring, I must say. Like, how did you get started in the bartending anyway?
Oh.
Everyone's got their story.
When I was 18 or 17, my brother had the event company.
Yeah.
So I was doing plenty of events with him, doing everything what it was needed. So through the waitering, bartending, bar backing, everything.
Yeah.
And I started to like see potential in that. But honestly, I started to work full time and fall in love with the job after my wife told me, like, events are cool, like smaller jobs are cool, but you need to have something daily. And she was then working behind the bar and everything. And I said, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, I just think it's funny, like ending up in hospitality because it's, for most people, it's quite the opposite of what they intended on doing.
I was also raised differently because my father was studying in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
During the deep years of communism. So he saw the world from different angle before everybody was thinking about, you know, freedom, independence, and living in different modern country.
Yeah, yeah.
So he always like was saying to us, I don't fucking care what you're gonna do. You just need to be the best.
So when you said about having a speakeasy bar,
yeah,
does the idea of wanting to make a speakeasy bar play a certain importance in Poland?
No, it's a little bit different. We are going, if the trend is high enough, it's coming with the delay to Poland.
Sure.
So it started everything with the trend, like, yeah, cocktail bars and so on. So for us, this was one thing, like the fire starter of that. But right. Secondly, we saw the potential in the place, like in the venue. Secondly, in the district, you have plenty of people that don't want to sit around a bunch of stag parties, tourists from one night and something like this. And the third thing, it was this, that we have an easy selection. You're then gonna have a crowd of guys asking if we have a draw of beer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you want to come here, you are expect different things, different quality, different matter, different approach. And this is why we choose this model of operating.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I remember talking to some of the other bartenders for a round table about the idea of going to a cocktail bar and then just asking for a beer and being like, well, what's the point? You know, like you go to the specific bar, whether it be, for example, maybe Sammy, for the experience of the drink and the service. You don't go there just to have a gin and tonic. Like, you can, but it's not really what they do. And so that was an interesting conversation about, well.
But the funny story is this, our regular guests, it's already my dearest friend Łukasz, is always drinking vodka Coke, always. He's saying like, I love vodka Coke because I still feel in the Coke.
Yeah,
I love,
yeah, yeah.
So no problem, man, you are our best person to be out here. You help us a lot during the COVID. You help us around all the times. For example, the menu that we have, it's his creation. He helped us.
Oh, out, really? Oh, beautiful. Yeah,
to produce it and to print it and to design it. So this was like super, super nice and super great friend.
Yeah, yeah.
But every single time when we create the new card, Łukasz is the first person that just coming out here and taking every single cocktail from the card.
Really?
Yeah. I want to check what you created. I'm going to be honest with you. This I like, this I don't like.
Yeah.
You could change this and that. And he's really like super fancy then.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
only
yeah.
on his daily routine, vodka coke, it's what he likes.
Well, I mean, I think that's still nice that he's still supportive in that sense, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's funny, like, he'll and break away from his habit just to go show some love, you know?
And when he's coming with his friends, he's like, stunning them, like, you need to take those cocktails, this is great for you, this is great for you, this is great for you. And Łukasz, what's you gonna have? Vodka coke. So this is like super funny sometimes and awkward, but...
That's hilarious. No. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt anything. I'll just
chill.
Keep chatting. So is it a one kitchen for both venues? Or is
yeah.
two? Oh, really? That's awesome. I've noticed that Asian food is quite popular in Poland.
Yeah, because Asia was like the longest trip ever. And most of the people were going only to Thailand because it was cheap and approachable and so on.
Gotcha.
But for the last couple of years, we spread like hornets around Asia.
Yeah.
And if you're gonna find smaller dumpling house, smaller home tradition, you are the man. So we travel a lot around the Asia.
Yeah.
As the nation.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
we fall in love with the spices, herbs, way of cooking. And there's why we have so many Asian spots out here. And the last thing, we had plenty of Asians before most of the countries, I would say. Because, for example, Vietnamese
yeah.
were have easy access to Poland because we used to be a communist countries together and so on.
Oh, right.
So even during 80s, they were coming out here. So the first international cuisine, I would say, that was popular out in Poland was a Pol-Viet restaurant. So
wow.
combining Polish way of eating and the Vietnamese style of cooking.
Wow. So That's this fascinating. Was.
So this Pol-Viet is almost like McDonald's, you know.
Oh,
if you see the restaurant or, I don't know, or that say Mr. Dong or anything like that,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know that your sweet and spicy chicken is going to taste in every single place the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's sick.
And after the communism, this generation have a big drive to travel a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Explore a lot. Working in the international environment,
yeah.
looking for job opportunities anywhere in the world. So, well-educated, quite good, decent English, so no problems with communication anywhere around the world. So, Asia is often like place to go or try to live or have adventure or things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Sorry, I was just thinking about the fan. Is it too crazy? I know it might get hot. I just might pick up, might get steamy. Sorry, I'm putting in a lot of work today.
I was doing TV series, this is nothing.
You were doing a TV series?
Yeah.
When was this?
Oh, it was like 8 years ago. We done with German public TV, the movie about vodka.
Yeah.
I was helping the producer to do all the stuff and I was the main character. So I spent 26 shooting days as the translator, helper, and the main character.
Wow.
And the program was called The Spirits of Europe. So we were traveling around the Poland and do the picture of what vodka is, tradition do they have, how it's produced, but also to show off how the country has changed during the last 20 plus years. Because on a massive scale, if you're talking with a random English person, he's thinking that we have white bars on the street. If you spoke out now with a random American person, he's gonna say the war is happening out here because Ukraine and Poland is the same. If you're talking with the random Australian person, he's gonna say, yeah, amazing kielbasa, I love kielbasa, or I love żubrówka, vodka, and that's it. So I really love such projects to spread awareness of my country. I'm also having a deep respect for any other culture and any other way of living. I was working in an international, really international environment. So, for example, when I was judging one of the global competitions that was called Balls Around the World, we have a cultural translator that helps us understand, for example, Japanese person, because she made the Japanese flag and small sign balls on her hand. And the guy said, like, this is something big for her. They usually not put anything on their skin. This is like sacred thing and so on. That is why when you see a woman with the tattoo, it's almost certain that she's from Yakuza. It was like this in the old days. So for a young bartender, doing this was huge thing.
Wow.
Sitting with the guy from Canada, for example, and one of the things to prepare for him was to prepare a pop-up bar, an idea how he would build the pop-up bar. And he came to us and like, dude, I don't know what pop-up bar is, because in lore in Canada forbids like such things. So we even don't have any type of relation to such places. So those small cultural mixtures, differences, it's always giving me this type of, okay, I don't know everything. I need to learn, I need to speak with people, I need to show them respect to build my own opinion and to be inspired by some things.
Well, that's one of the things that I've found to be the most important when traveling. Like, this is my first time coming to this side of the world, being around UK and Europe. And being a chef, you might learn a lot reading cookbooks about what's important culturally, food-wise, but it's not until you meet the people that share the stories and the experiences do you really appreciate history or the culture and the politics and how that has shaped the world and food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you could read a dish and go, oh, you know, these ingredients are specific to this country because of the weather and that would permit certain ingredients and yada-da-da-da, but until you go there and you go, well, we make this dish because of the relationship between the communism we had and that made it easier to travel. Like, that's just like, I didn't know this. Like, that's a really...
small Polish lesson. We had... the country was so big that we were having space from one sea to another sea, so from Baltic Sea to the Black Sea. We were one of the strongest nations for 300 years. We used to have a saying that Poland is a country of honey and milk, because on every single corner you're gonna have amazing food, you had amazing place to spend the time.
Yeah.
We had an inn style of restaurants for ages. They were run usually by Jewish communities that were really strict with recipes, with spreading the knowledge to their workers and so on. Even one of the kings in Krakow was doing, on one of the first restaurants on the main square, he was doing Thursdays with his friends, with people around culture, and he was spending days out there. So this is like, we had amazing food culture. But during the time when Poland disappeared from the maps, because our neighbors decided that we shouldn't exist.
What?
Like,
when did this happen?
In the 19th century.
Really?
Yeah. And 1793, the first took over happened when our neighbors, Russia, Prussia, and Austria decided that they're gonna take a bit of our territory. Later on, 2 or 3 years later, we have a first European constitution. So everybody had the laws. We have the first ruling guidance ever. So our neighbors decided, oh, this is something that they shouldn't have. So they took once again a part of our land. And on the end, they decided, okay, Poland shouldn't be on the map. So we're going to take over the lands. Our plus and minus is big because we are between two big powers.
Europe,
Russia and today Germany. So we were always struggling to fight with both of them. That is why the modern Danes are different, because we have Germans as our neighbors, friends, partners and so on. That is why, for example, in this situation of war on Ukraine, we are acting a little bit different, because we have a generation PTSD. We know how adds to fight such a big country. We want to help every Ukrainian person that we met on the street. Like, this was amazing last month. Like, for example, United Nations came to Poland and asked the Prime Minister where the refugee camps are. And they were like, we don't have much of those. Most of those people that were running from the war are under our roofs. People took them in their families and they were like, what? You don't have any central system? From one side, it's like, yeah, we should have central system to help those people. But from another, it was so warm and heart welcoming. You don't need to go to, I don't know, hotel or anywhere. Come to us, live with us for some time. We're gonna help you out. We're gonna build a bond with our families. We're gonna help you later on, and everything's gonna be cool. So for 19th century, we had a couple uprisings. We want to get rid of our neighbors from our land. Napoleon helped us out for some years. We have a small part of our lands. Mm. And thankfully, in the end of the First World War, we get it back our country.
Yeah, yeah.
After 4 years or 3 years of independence, Bolshevik Russia wanted to take over once again. And we were like, what the fuck? So we called it the miracle on Wisła. The day where when the big Bolshevik army was destroyed, and this is a national holiday, and holiday of the Polish army. We are celebrating them as the heroes of our nation. And this was between the wars, First World War and Second World War, we were flushing. In Warsaw, for example, we were drinking more champagne than in Paris. Escoffier,
yeah,
and his way of treating the kitchen was fast involved out here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We had amazing hotels. Like in Krakow, you have the French Hotel. Polish Olympic Association was founded out there, for example. So the French Hotel was so well known and so amazing run and so modern that the French chefs were coming out here to learn how to run kitchen like this.
Really?
Yeah.
That's one. Why is it that the French get all the credit?
The funny story is this, that the it's one dish that it's called, it's in the encyclopedia of the French cuisine, it's called the French rabbit. It was called French rabbit because it was created in French hotel in Krakow, but it was so in the way that they see the kitchen that they adopt this recipe to their own books.
Wow.
So yeah, we were having amazing culture of gastronomy, of hospitality, of chefs,
yeah,
of ingredients. But then the Second World War come, and believe me, this is why we helping Ukrainians.
Right.
Because we see the same type of aggression in Germans, as we saw out now in TV. Like no life celebration, only killing, death and destroying everything. So imagine that Warsaw, the city that is out now 2.5 million big,
yeah,
was destroyed in 90%. Often you're gonna see in the books like, yeah, in the Holocaust died like 10, 15 million people. Half of them was Polish citizens. They're gonna say that this was the Jews. No, it was the Jew was our friend. It was our neighbor. It was owner of the shop on the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter that he was Jewish. He was Polish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we lost a big amount of citizens. We lost big families. We lost a big part of intelligent and cultural society, because for Germans on the beginning and later on for Russians, they were the problem because they were the machine that drove whole society through.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So they wanted to get rid of them.
Yeah, wow.
So after the Second World War, we were devastated. And secondly, we were under the influence of Russia, like the communism Russia. So then everything that was private, everything that was interpreter, everything that you would build yourself wasn't so popular. So every 5 years you have a plan, we need to produce this amount of potatoes, this amount of, coal, or we need to build this amount of buildings. So everything that was different and wasn't in the frame was not forbidden, but wasn't promoted and wasn't like in the mainstream. So all the old recipes, all the old style of cooking, all of old products, they disappeared, basically. They just went through until today, thanks to spreading the knowledge from generation to generation. So this is it, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So we lost plenty of our cultural and food and hospitality heritage because of 50 years of communism.
Wow.
And when the 19s come, we were so driving with the freedom and independence and what we can build, what chances do we have in front. We were taking everything in. So that's why this Vietnamese style of food was popular, because it was different.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why on opening McDonald's we have lines, because it was different. So 90s was like wild, wild west of our history. We were trying everything, believe me.
Yeah.
So, and in the 21st century, when we become a part of NATO and UE, we were like, we still have this drive, we still have this energy, we still want to be innovative, we want to build different things and so on. And it's also spread through hospitality. I remember I was speaking with one of my Australian friends, how it looks in your country. So yeah, on the beginning, on 21st century, everybody was taking a gap year, and you know, we were going, I don't know, to San Francisco. I was working there behind the bar for 1 year, and I get back to Sydney, and I was like, okay, I know everything. I'm gonna be the best bartender in the town. No, it didn't happen. But
yeah, yeah.
But the awareness and the cocktail school of US came with him to Sydney. Then the next friend, yeah, I had the gap year. I spent it all in London. I took everything from London. I'm gonna come to Sydney. Yeah. I'm gonna be the best, dude. I seen it from my own eyes. Here it happens the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this drive, this type of emotions, built a modern hospitality sector out here.
Yeah,
we spread like every single country that we could travel, that we could go. We took what we like. We take also things that shouldn't be in this industry been to. So it's like, we are still evolving, and still I'm thinking that we are looking for our own independent way. But thankfully, we have a mutual cuisine as the Polish cuisine. It's a little bit like taking those communism, old school style of dishes, easy to prepare, like your granny would do it in home, and taking the new things or the heritage things to it, and we blend it.
Yeah, yeah.
So probably the same is gonna happen with Australia when everything is gonna like a little bit go stable.
Yeah.
Because you have a great mixture of cultures. You are a nation of immigrants, so you need to include every single thing at once.
Yeah.
It happens already in Great Britain. I'm laughing, like curry is national dish of Great Britain.
Yeah, it is a beautiful thing, and like it is happening in Australia, like quite slowly, seeing these mix of Australian and Asian infusion restaurants or vice versa, and really culminating, and that can be quite a beautiful thing, you know, when you really start to appreciate other people's ingredients and techniques and perspectives on an approach to a food, you know, and that creates a really cool thing, because you can learn. That's where we really start to learn about each other, you know, like. like for me coming over here, like I'm wanting to really try and taste traditional food. Like I'm vegan myself, but so it's tricky trying to go to Scotland and I can't eat haggis or something. You know, like it's not happening. Like I'm not going to do it. But like coming over here and trying to find food where I'm able to still taste like beetroot soup's common mm-hmm. with cream, or like dill and potatoes, or
dumplings and things like that.
And stuff mm-hmm. like that. Yeah, yeah. And so like, and there are a few places that are doing like vegan versions of that, which is really cool for me. So like, I can still taste a bit of that kind of history or culture, even though it might not really be traditional in terms of the meat they use or whatever it is, but like it can still offer me the chance to.
We have a long tradition of what we call Yarosh. So basically not vegan, but vegetarians. But it was like this, that when I was young, and I don't know, we were going from some wedding party or something like that. It was 1 out of 10 people. Out now it's growing and it's 3/4 people on the number of 10. And the vegan movement is still growing and growing and growing. So this is amazing. But yeah, in the old school of cooking, no, you need to have plenty of meat, plenty of ads like this. So you cannot run from that. The most important thing for the last couple of years was this, that the whole industry itself wanted to explore and evolve by itself. So yeah, it was amazing that we had the chefs that were working in Michelin stars in Spain, in UK and everywhere else. But they coming back and we want to find our own road to it. And the great example of that, it's Bottigliera, the first Michelin star restaurant in Krakow.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, they are amazing about how they see the kitchen, how they see their own servings, how they see the mixture of international influence and Polish roots. So this is a great beginning of the Polish school. We have also the first Poland Michelin star was the restaurant of Atelier Amaro, of the guy that is called Wojciech Amaro. And he was a TV star. So this was also like great combination because people saw that, okay, you're going to be a cook, you're going to be a chef, but you have also different possibilities of career in front of you. And from the job from end of 90s and beginning on 2000s, when you were saying like, I'm cook, I'm chef, you didn't get much of respect from I don't know, the parents of your lady or
from my parents.
So it changed a lot thanks to the TV series, thanks to showing off the skills that you need to have, the education that you need to do by yourself, basically, because the cooking schools probably, they are the same in Australia and Poland. Yeah, they are amazing for starting, but later on, self-education is the thing.
Yeah.
So we are just on the beginning of this world to show off the Polish style of cooking. We are well known that we know how to combine ingredients, that we work hard, that we love to speak with people, and we know how to combine the ingredients because we have a Polish word for that. It's part of our mental. It's called kombinowanie. So kombinowanie means being affected by the moment. I'm in the situation and I'm going to find the way out because I'm going to put this on that, this on that, this on that. So it's our national like treasure that we know how to act in the situations.
Right.
So, and kombinowanie also means that you're going to try until you're going to do it. So this is like untranslatable word to English.
Yeah.
But this is a talent that we have, and that this is what really helped a lot bartenders, chefs, and any other persons that work in hospitality.
You explaining that is like, yeah, it's basically what like hospitality have to do every day, all the time. They're presented with a situation that I have to have the wits to figure out how to deal with this situation.
Yeah, exactly. And this is like my favorite situation, like somebody entering the restaurant and I have issue with acid, I have issue with carbs, I have issue with egg yolk and everything.
You speak it,
and, yeah. And could you serve me some dish? And you are, sure. So this is a great situation for Polish workers.
Yeah. That's very good.
Once with the chef at Hilo, we had the situation, the lady come to us and she has so many feeding issues that I was standing out there and like, I'm gonna call the chef. Chef came, he heard the same story as me. And I was like looking at him, he was looking at me and like, dude, what I could serve her? I don't know, just don't kill her. Like, I don't know, really. So many food problems that no carbs, no green vegetables, no sugars, no this, no that. And like, just give her water, like, please. Like,
I don't know. A gazpacho or something. Yeah.
Because, yeah, and now it's people are aware of their food disorders and so on.
Yeah,
and this is great from one side because you don't have these bad reviews and bad experiences with the restaurants. But from another side, it's so challenging for the chefs, for the managers to have a dish for every occasion, maybe, either to train their staff, like, a sugar disorder, can you do something for me? And I remember when I started, when somebody would come to me, I was and said to me, I have sugar disorder, I would say, like, get the fuck out, because I don't know what to do. And now the awareness of these problems are quite normal and quite nice to, like, being able and being aware how to serve those people are. Like, for the biggest challenge was, like, one of our friends have the fructose problem.
She doesn't
tolerate fructose.
Yeah.
So it's like 90% of the spirits on the shelf have fructose in their as the ingredients. So it was like quite challenging to find those ones that have certificates, that have numbers on the bottles, or the producers are saying that this is that, this is that. So from one side is a pain in the ass, from another side it could be also a challenge that you want to go through.
And a learning experience to add on top of that. Like, fuck me. Like, the amount of shit that I know now because of these moments that I wouldn't otherwise have known if I was just doing the same thing every day for the same customers that just wanted whatever was on the menu.
Exactly.
Yep, cool, whatever, you're a robot. But like, these circumstances, like, oh wow, I can actually turn the bottle over and go, what's actually in this now? Like, oh wow, I can learn something. And now you can appreciate, like, and like, Jesus Christ, like, the amount of shit I know just because, and I would work in a vegetable restaurant, you know? So you'd think that, like, you wouldn't have many dietaries, you know? But like, the restaurant I was at was just like, every day was something. Like, no coriander. Like, we had someone that was like, nothing from the sea. And I was like, is that even real? Like, come on. Like, all this sort of stuff. And like, for a vegetable restaurant, you just think, oh, that we're fine. But you'd still get them. You have people. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I don't know. It's funny. But like, I think it's a real learning experience. And I think that's the most important thing. Like,
I remember we had I have dear friend, she's working with coffee. And she has some food disorders. But she's also a person that builds the diets for the people. And I was just sitting with her and just talking, and she was like, oh, for this you need to take that, for this you need to take that, for this you need to watch out on that. And I was like, for real? There's so many things that you need to remember and that you need to recall. And she made one of the trainings for one of the bars that I was working with, and people were like, whoa, so this is how it works. and the awareness started with that. And this is super great. And this is a little bit different. But you said about food disorder. Think about different things. Mm. On Monday, I was doing a training on neurogastronomy. Neurogastronomy is one of the youngest intern team knowledge that it's just growing. So it's about the light, it's about the sound, it's about the presentation of the food.
How did you call that?
Neurogastronomy. Neurogastronomy.
Yeah, sure.
So
everything else other than the food and the drink, yeah.
Yeah. But also structure, the way you're serving, the way you're gonna say about the food.
Wow.
This is like the new big thing and the new thing that we need to learn about.
Yeah.
Because, for example, in the blue interior, some flavors are tasting completely different than in green one.
Is this true?
Yeah.
Wow. And psychology is so fucking interesting, right?
So one of the points when I started to think about network gastronomy was some years ago, when I see a thing about tomato juice. Usually, I'm not a super fan of tomato juice, but always in a plane, I want to have a tomato juice. And I was like, what the fuck? Where it came from? What's the base on that? And I was seeing people around me doing exactly the same. And I was like, it needs to be something mental with the state. Like, yeah, we're going to crash, so I need to do something healthy for me. I'm not going to drink the normal, you know, Pepsi, Coke or anything. I'm going to drink the tomato juice. Then God going to give me his will to land normally or something like that. But no, it doesn't work like this. It thanks to scientists, we know that because the level volume in the plane, we are taking flavors in a different manner. And this is helping out, for example, us to have a certain level of music in the bar, to keep people attracted to speaking, to drinking, to spend the time, quality time. This is one thing. Second thing, it was like stupid story, like we love rap out here, classic, old school, 90s.
Yes, you know what, I don't want to jump in here, but like that's the first thing that I walked in here and was like, fuck yeah, like, I'm loving this. I love hip hop. Like I grew up on that shit. Like I'm talking like Run DMC, like Beastie Boys, like Cypress Hill.
Q-Tip and Soul.
All these classics. And I just came in, I'm like, fuck yeah, like I love this. Yeah,
we love it too. The interior doesn't quite fit well with this Alice Wonderland team. With the rap, but people like it because most of our demographic is from 28 to 36.
So yeah.
Those people also were born and raised during the hip hop times. But some time ago, we had a couple of notes from our guests that could we switch a little bit of music from this rap to, you know, something different. And I was having a staff meeting, and like for some days we need to switch up the music because people wanted to hear something different out here. So let's check it out, how it's going to work, how it's going to affect our work, our guests and so on. And after 2 hours, I was like, fuck it, let's go back to the rap. We couldn't grab the normal routine for us. We don't have this bass that is like giving us a tempo to work with. So we were so like bang with, I don't know what to do. I don't have this motion to something that give me a rhythm to work with, that we immediately switch it from like chill music to rap because we couldn't work. And this was really strange for us.
Yeah.
But this is show it. This is one of the examples how neurogastronomy is working on you, on your guest, on your quality time and so on.
Yeah. I just, even just to reiterate what you were saying there, like even in the kitchen, just we have a thing called power hour, where it's the hour just before service starts. And you get out, you get back from your eating your staff meal.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, guys, let's fucking, like, we've got an hour, let's get together. And we'd play music and it'd just be like, it'd be like that rave music. And you're like, all right, guys, let's go. How are you going? Like, what do you need help with? Let's, so you got 15 minutes. So you like, get start plating. Like, and it'd just be this like, cool. And then as soon as 6 o'clock hits, it's like music for the guests, but like, we're ready, you know? But you're right. Like, if you were to play some classical music, you'd be like, oh yeah, all right, cool. How you going, guys? You know, but like the rave music is like, yeah, let's go. Like we got shit to do.
So,
like,
so for example, it's also like different music for the guest, different music for the vibe, different music for the style of place that you're running. For example, one of the universities checked that jazz music helps a lot with the classical dish style French food and so on.
Yeah.
And like, cool. So let's try it. Let's look on that and so on. But some small details, like for example, the way of serving, we have this style of serving that we use different styles of glasses. Basically, around the world, people are in the hospitality, especially saying about no waste policy and so on. But they're doing the worst thing ever, so they buying a new glasses, and the cargo truck is so big, but we use 3 times lemons. So what's the fucking sense of that? Like, we went back to the basics and like said, okay, we have 12 different ways of reusing the orange pile or leftovers or anything like that. But where we could go further, that's why, for example, we have 12 different styles of cocktail glasses, because we're going to the thrift shops, to the charity shops, and bought the things from out there. Mm. We reuse those things that already would be the waste. And why I'm saying this with the neurogastronomy? Because people often are asking us why we have 12, we have one cocktail and we have three different styles of glasses. And we're saying, like, this is part of our philosophy. And from like disgusting face, like, why we have three different glasses? It's like, oh, this is ecology reason. So, oh, amazing, that's on you. So also communication and building a proof is also part of neurogastronomy.
Yeah.
So I love this. I'm running now a big, how to say it, like, I'm learning quite a lot about it, sure. Reading a lot about it. It's one of the reasons why we have, for example, out now the cocktail menu that it's just color names, like green, dark, or anything like that, for the World Class Cocktail Week, because we want to see how people gonna react, how they gonna look on the colors, not the names, where it's gonna be a connection, and so on, so on, so on, to find the best way to communicate with the people,
yeah,
and with their flavors.
Yeah. What do you think, doing this gastronomy, what do you think is the biggest surprise or thing that shocked you the most when it came to people's taste and how that can be affected by the environment?
With the neurogastronomy? Or
well, just like for example, I'll say this. So a couple of years ago, just for context, I went into an ice creamery and it was empty. So the ice cream parlor was just like, hey, I've got this new flavor. Taste it and you tell me what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't tell me what the name was. And he got this spoon and he went to this brown looking ice cream or whatever. And he gave it to me to taste. And I was like, I tasted it and was thinking, I was an apprentice chef by these days. So, you know, my knowledge of flavors would be quite minimal. But me thinking I know everything, right, being this apprentice consuming this food media. Anyway, I was tasting this ice cream and I was trying to figure out what flavor it was. I'm thinking brown, what would be brown? Like, and I'm just like, it's not chocolate. Is it like a caramel? And I was like, no, I don't think it's caramel, but like, I'm a chef, I should know what chocolate is caramel. And I'm like, what would be brown? And I turned to him, I said, well, I don't know. I can't think of the flavor. And he's like, it's vanilla. And I was just like, what? Like, what the fuck? Like, how the most common flavor in the world do I not know what vanilla? And I felt like I was a fraud. Like I was an apprentice chef who couldn't identify vanilla. But because of my idea of what color vanilla should look like changed, and I started to doubt myself, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just really strange.
But like, but this is natural, because we naturally combine colors with the flavors,
exactly.
And so on.
Yeah.
Even the structures. So often building a mindfuck situation to do a dry cocktail that is creamy or do things like that, it's building a different approach of the people, and this is great. Also, for example, we have shitloads of smoke cocktails.
Yeah.
You have seen yesterday, like the smoking gun is working all the time. we broke like 12 of those for the last 6 months, because so many people want to have a smoke sensation. And in Poland it's like, yeah, we love it.
Yeah, smoke. Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen them before and so on. So yeah, this types of serving is building a different awareness, different approach, and so on. But for me, the biggest thing was how to redesign way of thinking for the people in the manner like build their palette different way. So for me, it was a little bit like this, that my palette for spirit was growing thanks to the blind tasting.
Yeah,
I was running then bar that was partly a vodka bar. We have 150 different styles of vodka. And I was trying to program myself like, okay, I smell this. Okay, I smell this. Okay, this one have this structure, this have this structure. And to be honest, for 2 years, I was like master of that. With the Polish vodka brands, I was doing this TV program with the guys, and they were like, "Oh, you are the vodka master, so you're gonna have this blind tasting. Yeah. Get out, you're gonna come back, you're gonna have 5 shots in front of you, and you're gonna say what this was." Cool, no problem. I went out, get back, 5 shots in front of me. First two, this is this, this is this, this one I need to taste. Zip. Okay, this is this. I have 2 more. I need 3-4 minutes to just clear myself, and I'm gonna know what it is. Try. Okay, this is this. Try. This is this. 4 out of 5, like 100%.
Wow.
And they were like, "You are really the vodka master." I'm like, no, guys, you took the 5 mainstream products. And I was like, singly trying every each one of those for 3-4 months.
Wow.
Just to program myself,
yeah,
to know that this is this, this is this, this is the rice style vodka, this is potato style vodka, this is
wow
that, and so on. And this was amazing. But after years, when you don't try this and you don't keep up with this, you're gonna lose it.
Like learning a language, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like learning the language. So in the world where we have so many blowouts of brands, of influence on our own habits, on our own rituals, we need to concentrate purely on the flavor.
Yeah.
And this is either chefs, either bartenders, and so on. And this is going to build greater effects for our guests.
Yeah.
From another side, people started really to appreciate some brands,
yeah,
and they have their own favorite ones and so on. So we need to find the balance between our own expectation, our own evolving of our guest and their own habits and rituals.
Yeah.
So this is gonna be funny for the next couple of years, how to
jungle
those things up.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting when you look at, you know, the venue and the context and the approach and the idea here, experiencing going from outside down here, which is quite a unique experience, right? Like, to say little. I think what it does when you go downstairs and you go through the rabbit hole down to the bar is it really opens your mind up. And I think that's the beauty with if we talk about the psychology of the cocktails you have here, is that people who might originally come here, I'll just come here for a drink, and then they really find out what the hell's going on, and they go through this, the Warren,
mm-hmm,
to get to the bar. They're like, oh wow, like this is not what I was expecting. Maybe I might be open to trying something new, and that's
exactly
the beauty, you know. And I think that really helps when you have your cocktail offering here in the way you do it, is that your pre-existing idea of coming here and then sitting here at the bar, it's like, wow, like you already open up your idea to being offered something really
that's
cool.
Two things,
yeah,
why the road is different,
yeah,
and why we choose also approach of speakeasy style.
Yeah,
because still when I'm thinking speakeasy, I'm thinking no communication, no nothing, no this is a style of speakeasy, because we still have Facebook, Instagram, or anything else to communicate with our guests. So this idea of speakeasy has also evolved through last 20 years. But two things that are important out here. Firstly, if you're coming here first time, you're going to appreciate your time out here, because you spend your time to find us, to build the knowledge where we are, how to enter, what to do. So if you're going to spend 30 minutes on looking for us, so you're going to be more cherish the time that you spend out here. So this is the first step, what we like about our way of running this bar. So that's why we love the style that we have out now. We had some issues sometimes, like it was a first date of one of the guys. He came with the girl and she said like, I'm not going there. I'm scared. I don't know what's going to happen. Like,
Yeah.
And he spent 45 minutes to convince her to go with us because she was thinking like, this is going to be like...
She doesn't trust this guy.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. Yeah.
This is too strange for me and so on.
Yeah.
So cool. It happens. It could happen. So you need to be prepared for that. We were laughing our ass off. Where they are? They are outside and they are making negotiation to go down. Like, what the f-?
Yeah.
But this was also a great example, like how to welcome guests, how to build a comfy atmosphere for them and build this transition when we were talking about. The funny thing is also this, that we have a couple of guests that are coming here with moms, grandmoms.
Yeah.
We have so many dear friends already, besides being a guest. They're already friends of the place. They know us and so on. And they want to spread the love with their families. So we had once 4 generations of one family, like grandmother, mother and daughters, and this was like, whoa. So this is a little bit more than average. Average place to be. So this was amazing. And the last thing was this, that during the COVID we have plenty of because in Poland we have totally lockdown, we couldn't sell spirits to take away.
Oh really? As well?
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Polish, as I told you before, Polish law is like quite strict with regulation about producing the spirits, either distributing the spirit, so no sale. You have either license as the shop that you could, you need to sell takeaway, either you have a bar license and you just have a permission to sell at the spot.
Yeah.
So no takeaway cocktails or anything like
that.
So then me and the chef Bartek then invented together the style of serving the food that we have out now, that it's called the Spirit Kitchen. And everything started with the old Frenchy style of serving beef bourguignon, and we changed it to beef bourbignon. So the meat was resting in bourbon and with all the juices and so on. And this was the massive hit. We were then part of program of Restaurant Week that was Delivery Week. Delivery Week went from week to 2 months because people were so interesting and want to help the restaurants and so on inside this group. That it went from 1 week to 2 months, and we had so many positive feedback from the people, and people like bought so many of our food based on the spirit. That was super amazing. And afterwards the food started to be served out here. So from regular cocktail bar we went to be a place to serve food, drinks and experiences also. And we don't have like daily operation kitchen, but we have a festival kitchen to, because we are thankful to Restaurant Week that really helped us a lot during the lockdown times. We celebrate every single festival that they have on the way on the road. So we decided that it's not going to be a normal regular food. We need to invent every single time something different. Different style of the cuisine, different style of serving, different style of approaching. So one of the things that is really working amazingly is food pairing. So every single dish is food paired with the cocktail, and people are super like hype on this, that okay, so you could do a food pairing beside the wine. You could do tea pairing, you could do coffee pairing, you could do
panning with everything we want to. For real. I was thinking that this is reserved only for the, you know, wine and so on. Now let's open your mind and let's try something different.
Let's have some fun.
And yeah. have some fun.
Yeah.
And this is also quite amazing experience to see how people react on our pairings, on our style of serving and so on.
Yeah, I love that. Like, it's crazy that you say that because that's exactly what I've been grown to want to do. Like, because often when you eat or you drink, you might fail to think that someone who loves what they do made this too. But why I talked about this is the cocktails. So obviously I offer a pairing, but I'm not a wine guy. I haven't really appreciated wine. So
you are really Australian? I thought that every single Australian know how to pair the wine and
love
the wine.
No, like, I guess it's because I'm so new to it. So, and like, I can really value the effort that goes into it, but I just was never a huge wine person, so I just love cocktails for me. I would make cocktails at home all the time. If I just feel like I'm making pasta, I'm like, oh, fuck it, I'll make a cocktail. I'll shake something up. But so for this degustation, I thought, wouldn't it be beautiful to do a cocktail pairing? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, fuck, like, but how would I do it? Because cooking and plating and all that shit is already going to be enough. That's going to be quite hard to then, because I'm turning, like, I do all the cutlery change, the plate change, the drink mm-hmm. change. So I'm doing everything myself. So I need to really refine the time that it will take because otherwise it's going to be too much running around. And so I went to this bar in Melbourne called Pa. Mm-hmm. And I can't rave enough about what they do because it's a beautiful, beautiful concept. I went there like midnight after going to a few bars in Melbourne and it was just one guy. And you walk in and they have a few sitting tables, but the main area is the bar and it seats about probably 10 people. It's long and it's just one bench top and behind two fridges and just the bartender. Every table already has a wine glass there, ready to go, no matter what you get. Beautiful, beautiful glasses too. And I sat there and got chatting and the bartender, Tony, one of the co-owners, was like, hey, you know, well, what do you feel like having? Like, what's your palate? And I'm like, oh, something fruity, sweet, maybe a little sour. And he's like, okay. So he turns around and I said, obviously vegan as well. And he's like, okay. And he turns around and he opens the fridge. He just pulls out a bottle with no label, no nothing. It's like this orangey color. And he like twists the lid off. You hear that fizz. And he puts the cap on, gets a measuring, like a scale, puts the wine glass on, pours it. And he gives it to me. And he's like, smell it, taste it, tell me what you think. And I was like, okay, this is really strange. Like, it doesn't look like a wine, but it's in a wine glass and you served it like a wine. And I was loving it and I just tasted it and was like, oh, this is beautiful. It's like this persimmon kind of sour, like, it was really strange. It had a lot of depth to it. And I was like, this isn't like any cocktail I've had. And I tasted it and he explained the process. He's like, yeah, well, we're a cocktail bar, but we serve it like a glass of wine because we produce it like wine. He's like, you know, we will get our spirit, whether it's gin, vodka, whatever, we'll get our fruits and then we'll slowly macerate it to combine it to give it that full body flavor and then we'll clarify it, like whether it be mm-hmm. through coconut, ash, charcoal, whatever. And that helps it develop that full body flavor like a wine, letting it sit and marinate, but it doesn't have that identifiable separation of a cocktail where you can taste, you can go, okay, there's a syrup, there's a spirit, whereas this is like one drink. And I just fell in love because this is something that they can change, they can adapt to the seasons, it like, you know, takes a week or two.
Two
beautiful
things that I'm seeing from your story. First thing is a story that I had a couple of years ago in Warsaw, in restaurant, old school style of restaurant, or heritage restaurant, I would say. It was called Stary Dom, old house.
Yeah.
And the story of a former head chef out there. The head chef was coming to the owner and saying, like, dude, I'm already tired. I need to go somewhere else or switch the jobs because I'm working in this business for 40 years or something. And I'm already like, don't have enough strength to run the kitchen. And the owner loved the chef. He was like, probably father figure for him, or,
sure, yeah.
or the friend figure, and everything. And he was saying like, dude, you cannot leave. You are the soul of the place, and so on. So, in some of occasion, owner had a special reservation for his guests, and he asked the chef to do a Tatar in front of guests. And he did it, and everybody was so amazed. You know, Tatar, this isn't something amazing for us. We have 20 different styles of Tatar and everything else, and everybody knows how it's done and so on. But this process that they were part of, it was like, it's amazing. So it started with one dinner out now, started on, it's well known around the country, that they serve Tatar next to you. They cut it in front of you.
Wow.
And I was there once with a bigger dinner. This old chef came to me, and this was whole experience. Like, he was telling me, like, yeah, we take the meat from there, we take the veggies from there, here it is. And you know, you need to understand that with Tatar, it's fresh meat and so on, raw meat. So you need to have a good shot of vodka with that. So, from the you know, the trolley, he had the good bottle of vodka. He poured the shots. We drink it, toast him and everything, and he was super happy. Why? Because he had the contact with the guests. He wasn't on the back, as he told.
Yeah.
He was up front. And often in gastronomy as a whole, we forget that chefs, cooks need to go out.
Yeah.
Need to show themselves, need to speak directly with the guest. And the last thing, it's segmentation. I don't know how it works in Australia, but out here, the segmentation of the bar business, either the restaurant business, is just starting. So the people often don't understand why they don't not gonna have, I don't know, 12 different whiskeys in a high volume bar. No, because this is a high volume bar. You need to have a short offer just to make a faster decision to sell a lot, to serve better, to serve faster.
Yeah, work smart.
Work smart.
Yeah, yeah.
And people often don't understand this. Why why do you have only offer of 3 single malts? Because we don't give a fuck. We sell those 3 because we are thinking they are good and they are amazing for our place. And this awareness is just starting to grow in our market. The same with the difference between fine dining restaurant and the high volume restaurant and I don't know, bistro or anything like that. Like, when we were opening up Hilo, the Hawaiian restaurant, we called it bistro, and people were like, what the fuck, in Hawaii it's bistro style of serving? Yes, because it's not so efficient, it's not so, you know, it's great, amazing, healthy, fast made, great prepared, by not, you know, working with the sticks and putting a big frame on the plate.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
just
yeah.
Put it on the plate, gone. And yeah, we're gonna have chill out service, like they're gonna say to you, aloha, how are you? Going straight, not like, ladies and gentlemen, how is your day? Like, style of serving. So this is just starting to grow in Poland. Globally, probably only the States and London and like UK style of gastronomy is having those segmentation of, and probably the French ones, segmentation. Be aware where you're going, type of cuisine is gonna be, what type of service is gonna be, and so on. Because what I've seen around the world, that often word restaurant dissolve, like everything could be restaurant, and our expectations are sometimes too high.
Yeah.
The same with cocktail bar, speed bar, high volume bar, club, and so on, so on, so on.
A lot of people say this when you talk about expectations, and I think this is where innovation is good, because you can't really have an expectation for something you've never experienced before, and I think that's where it changes your experience. But the beauty of that, and this is kind of where a lot of restaurants that have been around for so long now, if they're not innovative, tend to fall behind, because if they're doing the same thing that was popular 20 years ago, you're going to have those guests that enjoyed it 20 years ago, but not necessarily now. Like, they'll just be playing it safe, doing the same food because it was good when they opened, mm-hmm. not thinking that the times are changing and you need to kind of change with that. Like,
but this is also because often if you have a good team that's working, you're gonna do everything with is, you know, in your power to keep them. So for them it's quite comfy to do the same thing all the time. But from another side, she's gonna do like, okay, let's involve this small ingredients from Poland to this style of food. So this is our where we going out from the safe zone for us. And the same happens with whiskey. We started like with no particular one spirit bigger shelf in the bar. Up now we have 140 different single malts. Every single week we have whiskey degustation. Mm-hmm. We have a collection that is rotating. And this was also like coming out from the safe zone of being only cocktail bar and so on. We saw that people in Poland really love whiskey. We are the ninth most important whiskey country for the Scottish producers.
Right.
We drink as much, almost as much Scotch as Germans. And we are half of size of of them. So we fall in love with Scotch and we want to spread awareness and build up the praise of the Scottish whiskey. And this is working amazingly for us.
Yeah.
And this comfort zone situation is also why I stand with the business. Because I was already called by people expert about vodka, expert about gin. I'm now working with the whiskey, cocktail specialists, producer specialists, marketing guy, this and that. No, every couple of years I'm trying to find a new thing that's going to be inspirational for me, that's going to build my drive for next year to build a expert awareness in some field. When I was like super hype on the tea, I spent almost a month on Ceylon, thanks to Dilma Tea and amazing program Dilman Mixologist, and build my awareness how the tea is produced. So it keeps me motivated and drive for next couple of months. And this was like unique experience. Also with the guys from Australia, so this was also quite hard. But also amazing because they have a different, completely different approach to creating the cocktails, to the process, to the flavors and so on. So this was a great mixture of experience.
But I think even that, just I think that's awesome, just the idea of being able to infuse tea with cocktail. Like, that's also something that's still quite relatively new. You know, your typical cocktail won't typically have tea, or you don't see it as often. And I think that that's awesome because
this experience was having two phases. One phase was like being aware of completely different environment as Sri Lanka. So Ceylon. So to meet the people, to meet such amazing people like Mary J. Fernando, so owner of Dilma Tea, that it's spreading his wealthy to the people that he works with. So we were going to the tea fields, meeting the people, meeting the tea fields managers, but also going to the child support centers that was built by Dilma. And on the next day, you were going to the plantation and try the tea. So the context of everything was like mind-blowing experience for me. And it's a little bit switching my way of thinking and to cherish the things that I have.
Well, I think what will sum it up nicely to how we started this chat, because you mentioning those two things about appreciating what you have and making use of that and wanting to highlight that in what you do would basically be what this is in a cup, right? And I think that was the beauty of it, which is what I loved so much about coming here last night, because when you go to a country and you want to really learn and understand it, for me, like, I don't want to just have a drink. I do want to learn. And I don't want to just eat here. I do want to eat and go, oh, this is something that they would eat for, like, historic reasons. Like, that adds more value. And I think that that's what was so beautiful about how you serve your drinks. And it's not just about going, okay, do you want this coffee drink, or do you want this sweet sour drink? It's like, no, no, okay, cool. That's the drink you got. Let me teach you something. Mm-hmm. And I was just, I was in love with that. And that's really, really awesome, because just for me, wanting to learn a different culture, that's just like incredible. And even just bringing out the different vodkas and having that information, like, and all that's just to your expertise and all to your experience, you know, like it's not something you just get accepted to a job for and tra-la-la-la, that's what you do. Like it's just your experience and your passion and your knowledge for wanting to really dive deep.
But this is also part of my heritage. Yeah, as I told exactly. you, my dad studied in the States. He traveled quite a lot around the world. And one of the first things that he teach me and he told me is like, be thankful that somebody visit you, because it means that he have some motive behind him. He want to learn, he want to spend great time and so on. So we need to remember this in gastronomy whole segment, not only chefs, but yeah. also bartenders, that we are for the people, and we need to be working in the manner of Polish saying. Basically, the guest in the house is the God in the house, so you should welcome him as much as you can.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
this is part of philosophy that I'm deeply in.
Yeah.
So spread the knowledge, spread the love, spread the hospitality around the people.
That's beautiful. I got to finish on one last question.
Yep.
Before we close up here. But it's the same question I ask everybody that's been coming on the episode. And I think it's a good retrospective way to look back at your career in a humorous way. And it's the question is something that chefs will often talk about. After a service, you'll have a beer and you'll have a laugh and you'll get to know each other and you talk about your experience and you'll just share funny stories. The question is the funniest or craziest time you found yourself most in the shit. It's a lot, and this is what's funny, like for chefs and bartenders it's almost every day, but there are always significant ones that will always just, you'll laugh to yourself like, oh fuck, that's right, that happened, how did I end up there? If you have one or two or three stories, please share away, but I think it's a great way to finish as a reflection on your career. I can just see it trickling back now.
so many of those, like, don't, I love one situation, like, I was working then in really fancy, in high volume bar, really fancy.
What was it called?
Baroque.
Okay.
And we had often, you know, show of guests with the Gucci and Gabbana and whole shit like that.
It's a real fancy.
Yeah, and once the guy came in, like, you wouldn't pay $5 for him, like, nothing. He was coming first time to our bar, sit in front of the bar, and like, dude, can I have the most expensive whiskey? Yeah, cool, no problem. This is, I don't really, it was probably some Royal Salute special whiskey, special release, yeah. Yeah, you want it on rocks? Yes, please. Done. I don't like it. Give me the second most expensive whiskey on your shelf. I'm looking at him and he's not like super fancy, like, oh, this is probably a fraud, but what can I do? Yeah, serve him second one. Man, I don't like it. I was like, fuck me. If he's gonna like retrieve that, I'm gonna be like 1,000 zlotys behind, yeah? And he was like, can't you give me a Coke? I'm like, sure, man. Whatever, you're gonna like it, yeah? And he mixed both of them, like 1,000 zlotys worth whiskeys together, and fill it up with Coke. And he was like super happy with that. Like, dude, you just drink the most expensive whiskey Coke in your life. Like, he spent also like 10 next minutes in front of me and said to me like, dude, I'm having 20 different bars around the country and restaurants. And none of my bartenders ever said to me why I should try the most expensive whiskey and the second most expensive whiskey. And you don't ever blink when I ask for Coke. Any other bartender from my bars would say like, this is improper or go and things like that. But you were super happy you making me happy. So this was super great. But, you know, after two really strong whiskeys, he started to enjoy himself. He spent a bit of time with us. Some ladies stepped next to the bar and, like, they start to talk with each other. And it happens that they were studying at the same university on the same subject. And they were just finishing their final exams. And he finished his final exams like 5 or 7 years ago. And he was like super hyped with the coincidence that happened and asked me, the most expensive champagne. And I was like, fuck me. So I came next to him, you know, start the whole procedure of opening the champagne, and I'm on my last round of turning to have the cork out, and he just snapped my hand, and the bottle of most expensive champagne landed on the floor, and I was like, what the fuck? And he's looked at me and said, like, you're not gonna be Mr. Perfect. And I'm like, no, just laughing with you, bring the next one.
What?
Yeah, he decided that I'm too perfect with the service, so he don't.
So he just slapped the bottle out of your hand.
Yeah.
The fuck.
And I brought the second one, and I was, you know, having a heart attack because the guy had the most expensive whiskeys, the most expensive champagnes, and he was like a little bit crazy. But I step up back, two steps back, open up the next bottle, throw in the bottle, and. The funny thing, he was like laughing all the time. He paid me in cash. He became my regular guest. He called me every single time when he wants to come. And one of the things was this, that he don't respect or don't have a smaller amount of cash than 200 zlotys in one paper.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically it was looking like side hustler from Brooklyn on the, you know, 90s mafia gang,
yeah,
putting 200s on the bar. Everybody was looking at him like, oh, he's the gang member or something like that. But he was really super nice person and super hype person. If he came to me and he was like going out, I was too busy with saying bye or anything, or he don't want to bother me. He called me on the next day and like, dude, thank you for your service. Thank you for being amazing bartender. Sorry that I didn't say goodbye yesterday, but I'm going to come today just to grab a coffee and say farewell. And I was like, from one side, you are a douche. Because you just throw on the ground the bottle of most expensive champagne on your first visit.
Yeah, yeah.
And secondly, you are the dearest person ever I met that really respect my work and really appreciate my style of serving. So this was like, I'm working with two faces persons,
yeah,
sometimes
yeah, yeah.
Bipolar or something.
Holy shit.
But super great. And until today we have a contact. So this is also great. And strange situations, like we have in one place every single year, the biggest party of the year was the birthday party of the place.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know how long is the paper from, how you call this?
From when the docket machine?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know how long is it?
I never thought about it.
16 meters.
16 meters?
Yeah, you know.
Really?
How I know?
Why?
6 minutes after opening on one birthday party, the waitress took whole line. And after 6 minutes, I went to the floor chef and said, like, we're not going to do it. Because in 6 minutes, 8 waiters take 16 meters of the cocktails.
What the fuck?
And we were like, we were just started laughing with the boys. Like, it's fucking impossible. We're not going to do it. Like, we just take it from one side to the bar, to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. And that's why I know it's 16 meters, because the bar was 4 meters long and we took it from every shelf on the bar.
Holy shit. And
every most of the people understand the situation because they saw how many people bounced to the bar immediately. But one guy was like super unhappy that, yeah, I need to go to the bar. Where's my drinks? And Serena, one of my favorite servers I ever worked with, took the guy next to the bar and he saw four lines of people want to have drink. And he was like, oh, partly understanding why he's not going to be served by the waiters, that he needs to go there, but partly no. And Serena was amazing with the story, like, you see this green bottle on the top floor? Yeah. So your cocktail is underneath that shelf out there. So as you can see, you have 6 meters line waiting. And then you're going to be served from the bar by me and so on. And then he saw the situation. It's like, now I understand what went wrong. And this was one of the craziest party I ever served. We had the main bar was for 3 bartenders and we were working our asses off. And in one situation, one of our regulars, my friend from the second row, was just screaming to me, just Andrzej, just give me a bottle of champagne and I have cash. I know how much and so on. So I just grabbed the bottle, give him a bottle of champagne, take cash. And then immediately 50 people in front of me, Andrzej, now me. And I'm like, fuck, now everybody knows my name. And on the same party, like, it was already like 3 o'clock. Yeah. It started to be quieter and quieter, but still like big movement. I look on the left, on my favorite bartender, his nickname was Helmut. And I saw like glass tower on his service station. I'm like, dude, what's wrong? And he was like, I'm building the wall. Maybe they're not gonna come to me, like, because I don't have anything left on my station. So I need to build the wall. And it ended up pretty crazy. We were so super hyped and so super busy. Until the end, we finished the surf on 5 in the morning. So one of the last surfs, I was asking one of the guys to throw me clean glasses to serve the lady in front of me. I catch the first one, but I didn't see the second one coming. So glass to the glass. I have glass everywhere on my body. The small pieces, you know, safe glass, how they calling. I'm like having blood everywhere on me. And she's looking at me, you're not going to serve me? I'm like, are you a vampire? No, so wait a bit for a serve in that next one. Just because people sometimes don't understand the situation, what just fucking happens behind the bar or behind the scenes. And this was like one of the craziest serves that we ever done ever. Was super, super fancy night, super amazing, super hype, super energetic, but also plenty of strange situation happens around the way. With the cook situation, I was with the chefs. My favorite situation was from one of the sushi bars. The new sushi guy went on the station. He was there with the head chef and with the old guy working there for ages, cooks on his left, and he wasn't aware that knives are really sharp.
Sure.
He wasn't aware of this, like, that they are so sharp.
Yeah.
So he was doing his best, doing, you know, the shishimi or, I don't know, sashimi or something like that.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really filling the station yet because it was his first day.
Sure.
So he just, like, bounced the knife. The knife went down, went through his feet and to the floor.
Oh!
And he couldn't like lift his leg because the knife was so long, so sharp and anything. And he started to like scream. And my friend, the old chef, was like, shut the fuck up. Guests are on the place. But my leg, go fuck yourself. We're gonna turn out the music bit when the medic's gonna come. But if you're gonna scream, I'm gonna fucking kill you. So, you know, busy sushi bar during the Friday night, two guys are doing their best and one is standing having, you know, cry in the middle, and it was so absurd situation. And the medics just came and the chef went out and like...
Was that like an open kitchen? So people
Oh, really? Open sushi station.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you have people everywhere. And he started to scream and the chefs just step in like...
You need
to be strong. You fucked up. So you need to
deal with it.
We are in the middle of service. You cannot scream. Just wait. You're not bleeding too much.
Too much.
So we were waiting. We were sitting out there and the chef asked the regulars, can you do a small, you know, line up next to the bar? So the other guest not going to see how the medic team enters.
Oh,
take
clever.
The knife out. Beaming, taken to the back and everything. Yeah, sure, no problem. And the face of the guy, like, what's gonna? Don't ask, don't look. It's gonna be a blink. Yeah. We're just gonna take the knife out and immediately we're gonna put the pressure on the on the finger and so on. But the funny story was this: that the knife went so deep in the floor that it took like 5 minutes to take the knife out from his leg. So the situation was super awkward, like we are standing in the front, people are like, what happened out there? Two medics like, take it out, and the chef was like, shh. So super awkward situation, but amazing to be a part of it. Like,
I think that's a great way to finish.
Cool.
I appreciate that. That's fucking excellent.
Cool.
Beautiful.
You should be one more thing. Dylan Howard, bless you. I hope that you're going to find this podcast. Second thing, super hype about Australian products. You're keeping amazing work with your craft spirits. So big praise to Four Pillars, Mr. Black and Star Wars. We need to have more of those in Europe. So keep up the good work. And hope that Polish and Australian cuisine is going to someday combine some workshops, some meetings and so on, because we have so many in common, like in the meaning of our last 20 years, and we have so much in common for the next 20 years that we should meet somewhere in the middle and start to speak with each other and start to bring something new on a global food table and cocktail.
Fuck yeah. Excellent.
Cool.
Thank you.
The Roots Hospitality Podcast is proudly supported by Sydney Direct Fresh Produce, the fruit and veg providor that are led by Luke Kohler, who has provided Sydney with some of the best produce for more than two decades and still smashing it out today. Thanks for tuning into today's episode. If you'd like to listen to more episodes or check out some cool behind the scenes photography, then head to the new website over at rootshospitality.com.au or follow Roots Hospitality on Instagram for the latest updates. Cheers!